The Corian Football Club podcast is kindly sponsored by the Lodge Hotel, famous for food, functions, and fantastic value.
Hello, welcome along once again to the official Corian FC podcast. Bit of spring in the air, the Cheltenham Festival is underway, and I've got my grass cut today, so all is good. Once again, a massive thank you to our kind sponsors, Corian's Lodge Hotel. Just to let you know, any plans for Sunday lunch, the Lodge Hotel is a good place to check out. A spectacular four-course carvey lunch served every week in the Lodge Hotel between, I think it's 12:30 and 2:15 in the Allen Suite. So if you're in and around Corian or the North Coast on a Sunday and you're looking for some decent grub, why not check out the carvery at the Lodge Hotel? Sounds good to me, Johnny. You look like a boy who could do a good carvery.
Well, the wife says I eat plenty in the house, so never had, genuinely not just saying that because they're sponsors, but never had a bad meal or a pint in the Lodge. So yeah, no, thank you as ever for their sponsorship.
Yeah, indeed. I'll echo that as well. You always get a good feed there, so, and you'll never leave hungry. So without further ado, we will welcome this week's special guest onto the podcast. It's a bit worrying. I was talking to Johnny before we came on air, and I did ask Johnny, was he, you know, what age was he when our guest was playing for Corian? And Johnny said he was 2 years of age. So it gives you an idea. We're going back a few years, a few decades, possibly, in this case, for our special guest this week. And I'm delighted to say it's none other than former Corian goalkeeper Wes Lamont. Wes, very good of you to come on, and a massive big welcome to the Corian podcast.
Pleased to be with you.
I don't know about you, Wes, but it scares me when Johnny McNabb says he was two when you were playing, because I was about, and I remember you playing, so I feel old. So how do you feel?
Well, see, to be honest, it scares me too when I look back, when I think it's what, 20, 30 years? Nearly almost 30 years. Let me see. I left Corian in the year 2000, so it's 24 years. 24 years since I left Corian. And I mean, it's over 34 years since I signed for Linfield. I mean, it's scary when you think about it. Like, it seems like yesterday at times.
Does it seem like yesterday, or does it seem like
it does? The memories, some of the memories are still fresh in the mind, you know.
I didn't mean to butt in, but you know, you say the memories, and a lot of sports people always say it's the memories that sustain them more even than the medals that they won in their careers.
Oh, without a doubt.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I mean, I never ever see my medals now. I think my daughter has all my medals. And to me, it's all, the memories are a lot better. It's nice to win the medals, obviously. It's nice to have the medals, but the memories for me are more precious. And although it's a mixture, I mean, I have a lot of fantastic memories playing football. A lot of not so good as well, you know. But that's football. You know, you have to take the rough with the smooth.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll come on to that. But I mean, you say it's been about 30 years, I think, since you left Corian as a player. But you were up at the club quite recently. I think you were special guest at the Corian Linfield game couple of weeks ago. I mean, how did that go for you?
Oh, very enjoyable night. Very enjoyable night. A great crack meeting some of the old faces again. And the club treated me very well. I was really chuffed the way the club treated me. You know, they treated me very, very well. It was a real enjoyable night, and it was a great. Corian played really well. It was good to see him getting back in the winning trail again. Although, to be honest, I would like to have seen maybe, if I'm being honest, I want to see Linfield win the league. You know, and I think Linfield needed the points more. But it was good to see Corian get back in the winning trail again, because I always have a soft spot for Corian. Although people always say I'm a blue man. But I always have a soft spot for Corian because I had four very happy years there.
And who did you meet at the club on that visit? I mean, was there people there maybe you had you met that you hadn't seen for a lot of years?
I seen Jim Boyce was there, and don't ask me about names because I'm absolutely brutal with names. And a few people, it took me a while to remember their names and stuff, but it was good. shaking hands with people I hadn't seen in years. And it was pretty enjoyable, I must admit.
And like, it's been a long time since you've probably been up at the club, probably. And just thinking, probably a lot of changes since you were last there.
Yeah. Big changes. I mean, upstairs, I couldn't believe how upstairs has changed. We used to go there after the games, you know, for a pint after the games. And I can't believe how well it's changed. But hey, a lot of good changes. The place is looking really, really well. And the artificial pitch is looking good. Although I'm not a big fan of artificial pitches, but obviously it's some clubs like Corian had to look, go in that direction, because it obviously brings in extra revenue. Corian have a plastic pitch, Crusaders, Cliftonville, and I mean, every night you drive by the ground, you'll see lights on. I mean, it's obviously bringing in good revenue for the clubs, and obviously in any weathers. I mean, one of the things I noticed when I played for Corian, the pitch obviously needed work done to it. Because see, the winter time, Corian pitch was awful in the winter time. It was like, sometimes you're, especially in wet weather, it was like a sticky old clay type surface. And even when the good teams we had, I mean, especially the first year it was Corian, we went for the title, it usually brought yourself down to the, you know, if you were playing a team that was lesser ability than you, it brought you down to their level, because it was very hard to play football on. And I think moving to the artificial pitch, I think, was a good move for Corian, because the pitch was, it was okay at the start of the season, probably towards the end of the season, but in that middle part in the winter, during the winter, it was awful to try and play football on.
Just when you were saying that, do you think if Corian had a better pitch, that team that you were playing on obviously went very close to winning the league that time, do you think that might have made a difference?
Very much so. Very much so. There's no doubt about that. I remember some of the pitches we played on in that season particularly. I mean, they were bloody awful. You know, that did not take rain very well, that old Corian pitch. And I think if only I had a better surface. I think it was the surface itself. It was a sticky clay type surface. You know, it didn't take rain very well at all. And you could play another pitch. I mean, for instance, the old Seaview grass pitch, the Crusaders, was a very tough pitch. I mean, I could take anything. Ballymena had a good pitch before they ruined it by trying to improve it. Windsor Park, obviously, was a good pitch. And I think Solitude had the same type of surface as Corian. That was a sticky clay type surface. That didn't take rain too well either. But there were some pitches, you could have rained on them all day and you could have played football on them, but Corian wasn't really that type of surface.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not anyway a groundsman, but I think they always said that the problem with the Corian pitch was that there was a bad, poor drainage, and you know, and maybe just at this point, it's maybe an appropriate moment just to sort of pass on our condolences to the family of John McLaughlin, former groundsman at Corian, who sadly passed away, I think, last week there as well. And our thoughts go out to John. Sorry, was John there at your time, Wes?
I think he was, yeah. I think he was. But he done a great job, you know, trying to keep the pitch, you know, in playable condition. But that must have been very tough. Mm-hmm. I mean, that keeping that surface. And the playing surface, the playing pitch wasn't great. But the training pitch, my God, in the winter time, I mean, you ran to your ankles at times. So that was a fucking nightmare. So it was, especially in the winter time.
I mean, Johnny, things have certainly changed, haven't they? I mean, you don't even remember all that.
No. I obviously remember the grass pitch, and I remember Crusaders before they had their pitch in Cliftonville as well. I do remember before all the plastic came down. So, to be fair, there's not many bad pitches left, I suppose, in the Irish League, which is probably a sign of the times. So, I remember Cliftonville's. It used to be really, really bad. I remember the grass pitch and stuff like that. So, yeah, Corian obviously used the pitch to their strength as well. A few years ago with Oran and that, and Big Skinner up front, and I suppose with better pitches, you probably have more time in the ball and probably need a different style of play. So, yeah, I think times have definitely changed.
And as you say, Wes, Ballymena is probably the only club that tried to improve their ground and actually made it worse.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, for the life of me, Their pitch, I thought they had an excellent pitch. The only thing that they needed to do with that pitch, I mean, they spent 240 grand on it, which I couldn't believe. I was absolutely astonished at that. All they needed on that pitch was a sprinkler system. The problem with Ballymena's pitch was the drainage was so good that when it came March, April time, the pitch hardened up, and they never rolled it. They never rolled it. And there was bumps on it here, there, and everywhere, and it became a very hard pitch and a very difficult pitch to play on. But all that pitch needed was a great drainage system. All it needed was probably a sprinkler system to dampen it down a wee bit in the March and April time, and that pitch would have been fine. But they went and spent 240 grand on it, and they made it bloody worse. And now it's an absolute nightmare.
I know. Did I read somewhere recently that they were thinking of changing down into 4G as well? Did I read that?
I heard that. They've got a 4G pitch down at the side of the ground that they train on. But I heard that they were going to maybe move a 4G pitch onto the main playing arena, which I hope they don't do, because I'm a great believer in playing in grass, you know. But I understand why some clubs have the artificial surfaces.
And I suppose, particularly in your position as a goalkeeper, like the 4G is not ideal, is it? I mean,
no,
jumping around
really.
The grass is a lot better.
No. Yes, especially sliding into the ball in a grass pitch is a lot easier than doing it in a plastic pitch, because you get some awful grass burns, you know, on the plastic pitches as well, which are not nice as a goalkeeper.
I can imagine. But I mean, you're from Ballymena yourself originally, is that right, Wes?
That's correct, yeah.
Aye, Ballymena man. And the thing about it, I'm not sure, like, because we'll have listeners, probably, like, we have listeners that will remember you in your playing days, and then we will have others that probably don't. But for those that don't, and even those that do, you were a relative late comer to Irish League football as well, weren't you? I mean, you didn't get into the Irish League till quite late.
Well, no, I was 26 when I signed for the Blues, and sometimes I think today, the way the game's structured, if the same thing was to happen today, I don't think I'd get the same chance, you know, the way the game's structured. I was lucky enough, I mean, I was playing in a summer cup competition for Clough Rangers, and fortunately for me, the guy who was on it, it was a semi-final against an Irish League select side from Larne. They're based in Larne anyway. But luckily for me, the guy who was managing that team was a Linfield scout. And luckily for me, I played a blinder that night. And the rest is history. I mean, he recommended me to the club. And funny enough, I thought I'd missed my chance, because that Saturday, the final was on that Saturday. This was a Thursday night. The final was to be played on a Saturday, and I had to go to a wedding. So while I was at the wedding, I found out that Linfield had sent a delegation down to watch me play. And there's me sitting, and I had no, oh no, you know, I thought to myself,
that's gone.
You know, it's gone, you know, but they stuck with it, fortunately enough for me. And
Did you have any reservations about going? Because obviously that's a big jump, no, or easy decision?
Absolutely not. Absolutely. Once I heard Linfield were looking for me, I would have walked to Windsor Park from Ballymena to sign for them. You don't turn Linfield down, you know. Even though at the time they had signed, they just signed Paul Prentice from Cliftonville, and Paul Prentice was an excellent goalkeeper, and they had spent a lot of money on Paul. And people were saying to me, "What, you don't go to Linfield? You'll never get your chance." But I didn't see it that way. I thought to myself, "Well, you know, I'll learn a lot more at Linfield. You know, the biggest club in the country, and." I had no doubts whatsoever about going to Linfield. And Eric Boyer, you know, I have a lot of him to thank a lot, because he gave me a chance. And he assured me before I signed, he says, "Look, son, if you do the business and I think you're good enough, I'll put you in." And he was true to his word, you know. I'll be eternally grateful, because I owe the man a lot. He was the one that gave me a chance at the end of the day. I was lucky enough, I was fortunate enough to take it.
And what was it like playing in a big two derby? Like obviously we were, you know.
Funny enough, that was my second game for the Blues. I made my debut down at Ards. We won 1-0, kept a clean sheet. And the second game was big two game at the Oval. Now, 3 months previously, I was playing in a Saturday Morning League Cup final for Kilkenny Rangers. And here I am 3 months later playing in a big two game. And to be honest, lucky enough, I played a blinder that night. And we scored, big Stephen Baxter, I think, scored a last minute winner. And it was to play in front of a crowd like that was a great buzz. You know, the atmosphere was fantastic playing at the Oval, you know. I thought to myself, you know, I could enjoy this, enjoying this, I like this, you know. And obviously, it went on from there.
Maybe the fact that you came to it late, that you really seized your opportunity then, and you didn't suffer from any nerves because you just thought, I am going to make the most of my opportunity here, and
Yeah,
that
very
was
much
it.
so. Yeah, that was it. Although I was 26, I was still a wee bit inexperienced at that level. And when I had my first bad patch, I mean, a lot of people don't realize it really took me, honestly, it took me about 2 years to really settle in at Linfield. My first season there, I made 34 appearances, which if anybody had told me that at the start of the season, I would have laughed at them. But there it was. I made 34 appearances. And the next season, I made three appearances. And then I got a wee niggling knee injury, and Big Alan Patterson came in, and Big Alan Patterson was fantastic, and he kept me out for the rest of the season. But I think playing that season in the Swifts, I think was a great thing for me, because it helped me settle in. I was playing with players, it helped me get to know the club and learn about the club, and I think that season in Swifts was a big plus for me, because it helped me settle in at the club a lot there. And then when I got my chance back again, I was determined I was going to hold on to the jersey.
Yeah, you were probably able to settle into the club away from the prying eyes of the press and the public as well, weren't you? I mean,
Exactly. I mean, Linfield, when I first the first season at Linfield were in transition, and believe you me, the fans are afraid to man them up there. We weren't. There was a few performances we weren't. I think I hit home one day when we were playing Cliftonville, and we were getting beat 3-0 at half time, and I was having a nightmare. I really was. And Eric Boyer came in and he pointed the finger at me and says, "Listen, son, this isn't England alone you're playing for." You know, and that's when it really hit home to me. You know, I thought to myself, "Son, you better get your finger out here," you know. And wee moments like that, when I got my first rollicking from Big David Jeffries. Believe you me, a rollicking from David Jeffries is not a pretty sight. I didn't come for a ball one time, and he made sure I came for the next one. I can assure you of that. But hey, having that pressure on you all the time, it keeps you on your toes. And that was one thing about Linfield. It's BNT, they demand high standards up there. And if you fall below them, they're not slow in letting you know.
And that, I mean, Johnny, that still applies. I mean, that's just the Linfield way. It was there when Wes was there. It's still there today, isn't it?
Oh,
Yeah, for
it's a
yeah, very much so.
special mentality. I think you need to play for Linfield, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, I was at the League Cup final there on Sunday, and like Linfield won the cup. It was just another day, at the office for them.
Yeah,
But that's
I was
all
there
it is.
myself. Yeah.
It's banked. It's only the League Cup really to them. Let's be honest. It's banked for them, and that's it. And they move on, and you know they're still in the league race and the Irish Cup. So that'll be where really it comes down to probably.
Mean, they give me sorry for to give you an example of what you're saying there. 94 season was probably the highlight of my career. I mean, we won four trophies that year, but the next season we were decimated with injuries. And we had an absolute nightmare in the league. I think we finished fifth or sixth, but we still won the Irish Cup in the County Armagh Shield. But it was, you know, it was classed as not a great season because we didn't do well in the league. You know, any other team would have said, "Oh, we won the Irish Cup in the County Armagh Shield. That's a brilliant season." But at Linfield, it was, you know, it was different.
And is it like that? Say, like when you were there, like as Johnny says, like Linfield won the League Cup recently against Portadown. Like you always get the impression with Linfield when they win something, it's right on to the next one. It's
Yeah.
just the
Oh,
way it is.
of course, very much so. It's just the way they do things up there. Linfield gauge a good season on where how they do well, how they do in the league. It's not a good season unless they win the league. That's the way they do it up there. They could win the Irish Cup and win the League Cup, or say, and it's a half decent season. They qualify for Europe, but it's the league that they want all the time, and it's probably why they've won so many leagues now through the years. Because of that, and obviously their fans are very demanding. They demand success up there. They don't let them rest in their laurels.
And
I mean, they must be. Go ahead, Johnny.
Now, you played in Europe as well, did I? Copenhagen? Did you speak?
The European games were special. You know, you can't really describe to anybody. You know, the big European nights were fantastic. I mean, that 94 side, we had four massive games again, two against the Blazy and two against Copenhagen. And obviously, the last minute goal we conceded against Copenhagen done us out of a game against AC Milan, which was, honestly, it was a real big disappointment because AC Milan were the best team in the world at that time. And to have got a game against them would have been really special. But you can't always get what you want. The games against Copenhagen and Tbilisi were really, I mean, Tbilisi, there was, 50, 60,000 people there. And to play in front of a crowd like that there was just amazing.
Would you get nervous at games like that?
Of course, there's going to be an aspect of nerves. You know, in the changing room really before the game was probably the worst part of it. Because you want to go out there. You always want to go out and get the game started and on its way, you know. And I always seem to think if you don't get nervous, there's something wrong with you. There's two ways you can channel nerves. You can crap yourself or else you can focus, you know. And I always felt that nerves always made you play better, you know. But, you know, I helped get that adrenaline flowing. And, I never had any problem. Yeah, there were games you were nervous, certain games you were nervous. But obviously when the game started, those nerves disappeared, you know, when you get into the job of, you know, playing the game.
You get your first touch. But the Copenhagen game that Johnny mentioned, I think it was like a last-minute free kick to win it for Copenhagen, I think I read.
Oh, it was, the team had done so well. I mean, I remember we had beaten 3-0 at Windsor Park. It was a fantastic role at that time. I think after 20 minutes in Copenhagen, the Linfield had taken 1,000 fans there and created a brilliant atmosphere. And after 20 minutes, we were 2-0 down. And we thought, well, geez, here we go. We're going to throw this away. But we held on and we held on. I think it was 3-4 minutes into injury time. It might have been longer. The referee got a free kick. And to be honest, I've never been beaten by a harder shot in my life. The minute the ball went past the wall, I think it was the last time I've seen it. The next time I seen the ball, it was picking out of the net. I've never been beaten by a harder shot in my life. It went in like a bullet. And that was at 3-3. And they beat us an extra time, 4-3. And funny enough, coming out of Copenhagen that night, I thought to myself, these jammy dogs are going to get AC Milan. And sure enough, that's the way it panned out. When AC Milan came out of the hot work, I was really sick, you know, because it was, that would have been fantastic playing there.
And I guess that was AC Milan of Hullet and Frank Rijkaard.
They were a fantastic team at that time. I think they won the Champions League that season. They beat Barcelona 4-0 in the final. So they did. And I'm sure, you can think, sometimes you think about it, you know, what it's one of those ones where you think what might have been. But when we think that we went on there and won four trophies, you know, the season had a nice end to it.
Wasn't bad. And that would have been some Linfield team then. You mentioned a couple of the names, Baxter and David Jeffrey.
Big David wasn't there at that time. David had moved on. We had, that team was full of characters. I mean, we had possibly the two best fullbacks I ever played behind was Easto and Dorney. They were through a brick wall for you. And you had Noel Bailey at the back, and Big Spearsy. Never missed much in the air. Noel Bailey could read a game like a book. And we had players in midfield. You had Lee Doherty. Lee Doherty looked for it like a soft boy when he was off the pick, but he was like an animal on it. Plus a good player too. You know, Lee Doherty was a good player, but he could handle himself in the park as well.
But that's what you want from a midfielder, isn't it?
Oh, exactly. No, Doc could look after himself. And we had players like Gary Peebles and Pat Fenlon as well. Pat Fenlon used to make me chuckle. Pat Fenlon was one of those players that made me laugh during a game. Because he would pick out a pass, a 40-yard pass. You thought he'd eyes in the back of his head. You know, you sort of laughed to yourself, how the hell did he pick that out, you know? There was a lot of that with Pat Fenlon and with big Stephen Beattie, smashing left foot. With players like Philip Nell and Supi Campbell, two of the only players I would never dive in on a training because they make you look like a fool. They were that skillful. And up front, we had Gary Hale, probably one of the best strikers I've ever seen. And Desi Gorman, what a character he was. And that team was full of characters. And I think that season we went unbeaten from November. We didn't lose a game from November. And the last 2 weeks of that season were absolutely momentous, because I can remember us going down to Portadown. Portadown needed to win that day to win the league. Portadown had to win that game that day to win the league. We had to win to stay in the title race. And I think Shamrock Park was 10,000 in it. And we beat them 2-0. And that was a fantastic day. And then that was a start. 4 games in a week we had to play. We played Corian in the League Cup final on the Tuesday night, beat them 2-0, and then we had to go to Newry on the Thursday night. And the league was still in our hands then. But Newry, we dropped 2 points that night. Newry drew one each with us. And after that game, we were all a bit deflated because we thought we'd blew it. And we realised the title race had now swung in the favour of Portadown and Glenavon. They were sitting level in points ahead of us. So really, we needed Portadown and Glenavon to draw, and we had to beat Glentoran in the last game of the season. And I don't think I've ever played in a game with so many different emotions than I did that day. I mean, the Glentoran fans and the Linfield fans were sort of telling us what the score was at Bournemouth Park. Glenavon went into a 2-0 goal lead, and the Glentoran fans were singing, "You're not champions anymore." So you were trying to, you know, concentrate on the game. At the same time, you were hearing this, and you know, you thought, "Ah, the league's lost," sort of thing. You know, we've lost it. And then, it was surreal. Next thing, the Anfield fans sort of give like a hard hit, like a half-hearted cheer. You realise then that Portadown had scored, had brought it back to 2-1. And then we scored against Glentoran. Then we scored again to make it 2-0. I think just before that, the place went mad. We realised that Portadown had equalised and made it 2-2. And Trevor Anderson and Lindsay McCombe were out giving it all this, you know, getting us forward. And we realised the game was 2-2 and the place was going mad. And but then the final whistle went at Windsor Park, and we couldn't celebrate because we didn't know the result from Morneview Park. And I think it was 4 minutes left. And I have to say, as long as 4 minutes I've ever suffered in all my life. We had stewards, we had fans on the park, and we had I remember a lot of Glentoran fans at the corner of Windsor Park. They were standing waiting for the result as well. And I remember standing listening on the radio with a couple of stewards. And I remember the commentator, and it's Robert Casey. He's clean through. He could win it for the Ports. He hits it, and it's past the post. This is where the commentary was going. And I was standing there, and you can't describe to anybody, oh, my God, here we go. And when he said past the post, and a couple of seconds later, and there goes the final whistle. You have no idea the euphoria that goes through you at that time, you know, realising that we had done it. People had written us off, and we had done it. It was one of the most ecstatic moments of my life, and the place just went clean crazy. And it was obviously a great memory of my career. You know, you don't forget about moments like that. And obviously, the icing on the cake was winning the Irish Cup a week later. So, 4 trophies. So, it was a good wee haul for the season.
4 trophies in the one season. And then, of course, Johnny, that would have been days before mobile phones and everything.
Yeah, I was just about to think that. I was actually thinking that. I was like listening on the radio and stuff. I was just actually thinking about that. And I know that's, if there's a way to win the title, that's probably the way to do it. And obviously, Portadown won, Glenavon will want to win Portadown, they won the league, or vice versa. So, no, that's.
That is how to win a league, isn't it?
I just do it dramatically. And maybe not good for the nerves, but sure, that's...
Oh, definitely not. I mean, as I say, with so many emotions, you go through so many emotions, but when you get to that final, when the final whistle goes, it's hard to describe, you know, how good a feeling that is. Fantastic feeling.
And chat us about your call-ups to the Northern Ireland squad then. That must have just been a whole fairy tale, you know, turnaround.
I couldn't believe it at the time, you know. It was... 4 years previously, I was playing Saturday morning league football, and here I'm with the Northern Ireland squad, rubbing shoulders with the likes of Keith Gillespie and players like that. It was, you know, training with players like that. It was a great experience. And,
You say that Saturday, you were playing Saturday morning football, and then you were rubbing shoulders with like Keith Gillespie. And people often talk about like imposter syndrome, where you know, like you think, oh, did you ever suffer from any of that? Just given what you're saying, because Keith Gillespie played Man United, Newcastle, and now you are in the same changing room, or maybe you didn't. Maybe you just thought, I'm here and I deserve to be here.
To be honest, there was a wee bit of that, but once you're in there among them, you can't. You have to. I mean, there's a realization that you could be playing here, you could be anything. You've just got to keep. You've got to be professional, and you know, keep on top of the game. And it's, especially the Austria game. I missed playing in the Austria game with the skin of my teeth. Really. I mean, the manager had a decision to make. Brian Hamilton had a decision to make, because big Paul Key, he was, the two keepers was me and Paul Key. Now, Paul Key had played in that stadium before for Northern Ireland. And the manager had a decision to make. You know, do I play the keeper with the experience of playing here, or do I play the keeper with no experience? And he picked big Paul Key. And to be honest, it was the right decision, because big Paul played a blinder and Northern Ireland won 2-1. So he made the right decision. And big Paul was a good keeper as well. And I'd no qualms about him playing. And obviously I'd accepted the decision, but that's how close I came to playing for Northern Ireland, which would have been nice. But I played a couple of times for the B international team. So that was a nice substitute. So
That's not bad, is it? Like, calling, like as you say, from the Irish League into the Northern Ireland squad. I mean, Corian, like Felix Healy at the 82 World Cup, was playing for Corian and it was part of the squad at a World Cup finals in Spain. Now that's pretty good as well.
Healy was a great player, and I think George Nalot from Linfield was in that squad as well. But Healy was a class player. I remember watching him when I was standing on the terraces. He made the game up easy.
He loved Linfield too.
Oh, he did. I'll never forget his interview after that. Was it the 81 Cup final, 82 Cup final? And they don't call him Lucky Linfield for nothing.
But here, your time at Linfield and all, and then unfortunately, as football is, everybody has, as a footballer's career, we all know you move and all.
Yeah.
So you had a really good time at Linfield, and then I'm just wondering what happened then and how that came to the end and how you ended up down at Corian or up at Corian.
Well, after, I think we won the Irish Cup and the County Antrim Shield in the 95 season, 96 we didn't win anything. And I think the team was, I can't for the life of me understand how that team didn't go on and dominate the 94 side, because it was a cracking side. I think it was decimated with injuries this season afterwards, and then the 96 season it all fell apart. We didn't win anything. And I think the manager came to the conclusion that the team needed changing. And they brought in a new goalkeeper. They wanted to sign me, but we had a disagreement over the contract and stuff like that. And I got the impression that the manager, he wasn't really... When you get that feeling that you don't think that the manager rates you, and it's time to move on. There was a lot more to that anyway, but I'd come to the decision. I thought to myself, it's maybe time to move on here. And Kenny Shields approached me, and Glenn Thorne one day signed me as well. And I felt I couldn't sign for Glenn Thorne.
I'm just thinking, you couldn't have gone to
them. I'd made too many friends at Linfield. I know Glenn Thorne was a tasty prospect, but I just couldn't do it. So Corian was the next prospect. And to be honest, as a Ballymena man, the fact that I played for two of Ballymena United's most hated enemies was is a nice feather in the cap, to be honest. I thought to myself, they gave me dogs abuse when I played for Linfield. They're going to absolutely love me playing for Corian. So that had a big factor in me going to Corian as well.
I like your thinking. I like that. Kenny was obviously a manager then, and he was putting together a good team, and he obviously sold the club to you well then.
I'd known Kenny for years. Kenny, he was very charismatic. Kenny said what he thought, you know, and didn't care what anybody thought. Korean had a good side. They'd just come up from the first division. I think they'd won the first division. We had a lot of good, there were a lot of good players in the team. Pat McAllister was a cracking player. And, we had Brendan Aspinall at the back, Big Gaggy. We had Robbie Brunton, Oliver McCauley, two fresh solid fullbacks. We had players like, as I say, Paggy, Goosey Young, Greg O'Dowd. Up front, we had Sammy Shields and David McCallum. We had Michael Surgner, who was a character. It was a great wee team and played some nice football as well. And we had a great start to the season that year. I know we went 12 points. A lot of people make light of the fact that, oh, you were 12 points ahead. We threw away a 12-point lead. But teams had two and three games in hand on us, so it wasn't really a 12-point lead. You know, those teams had won those games in hand. They were a lot closer to us, obviously. But I always look upon that season as the one that got away. We should have won the title that year. There's no doubt about that. Most teams, when they look back on a season, they go through a wee bad spell. You know, teams that win the league, you know, so we had a wee sticky patch then. And unfortunately for us, we had our sticky patch right at the death. We had just beaten Crusaders 3-1. They were our main challengers. And I remember being at a friend's house the day afterwards, and when I played football, I didn't read the papers that much. But my mate handed me a copy of the Sunday Life, and curiosity got the better of me. I opened the back pages, and the headline, Champions Elect. And I thought, oh no, I hope that's not the kiss of death. And it turned out it was the kiss of death, because we didn't win another game after that. And coming off the pitch that day, if anybody had told you, you're not going to win another game for the rest of the season, I would have laughed at you, because we played really well that day. And anybody looking at us would have said, there's the champions, because we did. We played Crusaders off the park, beating 3-1. And then we played Ards, down at Ards, and we drew three each. We were 5 points ahead with five games left. And we played Ards, and we drew three each. I got sent off that day for a penalty kick, which I thought was never a penalty kick. I thought the referee was a bit dodgy that day. But that was 2 points dropped. And then we played Lough Gall in the quarterfinal of the Cup. We could have won the Irish Cup that year as well, but we drew an LHP Lough Gall, down at Lough Gall, and the replay at Corrine, they beat us 1-0. And I don't think we recovered after that. I think that was the straw that broke the camel's back. We never recovered after that game, and we never won a game after it. I think Glenavon beat us 1-0. Glentoran beat us 1-0. Our 5-point lead had gone. And I think with two games left, we had to play Crusaders at Seaview. And a draw would have got them the title. And that's the way it panned out. They drew an LH and they won the title that day. And it was very disappointing, because I always look back at that as the one that got away. And I think the team, even the Irish Cup, we could have won the Irish Cup that year as well. It was a flat end of the season that promised so much. I mean, we won the Ulster Cup at the beginning of the season, and we could have won one of the big ones. It was very disappointing that we didn't, because that was a great wee side.
I mean, you say there, a lot of Korean fans, even to this day, still look back on that as a missed opportunity to win the league, and they still just hark back to that and wonder, like you say, it was one that got away because they were in the right position. And it still rankles with Korean supporters too.
You see, to be honest, there was a few games towards the end of the season. We were treated absolutely shabbily by referees. And I'm not just saying that. You know, there was a few decisions. I mean, take Pat McAllister, for instance. Pat McAllister was one of those players. He was always 100%. You know, he would go through a brick wall for you. And some of the bookings that Pat received, I thought, were a disgrace. And as those bookings add up, you know, obviously suspensions come into play, and we missed Pat. I think, we drew, I think it was 8 or 9 games in that campaign. And it just goes to show you the difference, the margin between success and failure. If we had won two of those games, we were champions, you know. And I can remember a few games that season where I think the referee, to be quite honest, were very shabby. Now, I don't know if that was a result of you know, they were getting one begging Kenny, because Kenny was the type of guy who spoke his mind, you know. And I think Kenny wasn't slow in letting them know a few things, a few parts of the season. You know, maybe they were getting their own begging Kenny, but especially the Ards game, the penalty kick that was given against us, I mean, that was 2 points dropped. If we hadn't lost that game, I think we would have went on and won the title. But obviously, drawn three, dropping 2 points. Crusaders won that day, so it brought the gap down to 3 points. And obviously, losing our next game, losing the game against Loch Hall, as I said, was a big blow. And obviously, at the end of the season, when you had the pressure aspect of being so close, you know, the wheels obviously came off.
But I mean, do you think... was that maybe just a lack of belief or a lack of that tradition of winning? Because we spoke earlier about Linfield, about how they just know how to win. Was it a fact that Corian had maybe won one league in their entire history that they just couldn't get over the line?
I think that's part of it. Because, I mean, Crusaders were full of experienced players. I mean, Crusaders had players like Alan Dornan, Steve Baxter, Glenn Hunter, and all playing for them, who had won titles. I mean, I think I was the only player in the squad that had won a league. I think lack of experience did come into it a wee bit. And obviously the realisation that you were so close to achieving something really special, you know, I think maybe did have a, you know, a factor in what happened.
That's a shame, like, because I mean, Johnny, do you remember, I'm sure your dad's probably spoke of that, but I mean, because those were heady days for Corian. I mean, they took massive crowds to all the games and they were like...
Oh.
They were great days, but I mean, Johnny, did your dad talk to you about them?
The only thing my dad chats me about is what we said about the time that Corian should have won the league. It's brought up nearly every other week, because it's always, obviously, we haven't won the league in a very, very long time. So, yes, I still think, you know, Corian, you know, yeah, they still travel well in big numbers, and you always see all the pictures of the shed, you know, on the shed end, the far side and all, and you see all the different pictures, and I think football back then, and We actually spoke about it the other week there, the characters, and it's one of the things where Packley was a character and all the fans says Wes was a character and Tony Gorman and Stephen Beattie and all them guys, there's probably not as many characters anymore, and it probably is probably a dying art, and probably like some Mickey Collins was a character and Big Spike up front and guys like that, and I think
very much so.
It's sort of a dying breed, which is, I don't know what it is, I don't know if it's just a sign of the times or social media, I just don't know. What it comes down to, but it's probably sad, I suppose, in a way too.
Do you think that way that there's maybe less characters in the game?
I totally agree with everything you said there. Totally agree. I don't know what it is. I mean, I noticed that when I was coaching at Ballymena, I just didn't get their sense of humour anymore. I remember Roy Keane making a comment about it when he had his last days at Manchester United, the young players coming in, it was just a strange... They were a different type of character and he just didn't get their way of going. And I think he maybe thought at that time it was time for him, you know, to get out, sort of thing. And I felt something similar at Ballymena when I was there. I just didn't get their sense of humour anymore. When you see players, an example, when you see players coming in after, say, a 3 or 4-0 defeat, you know, and laughing 20 minutes after a game, laughing and joking. I mean, in my day, that was alien. That just didn't happen. You know, players were, you know, nobody opened their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after a defeat like that. And Ballymena, we took some tingings. There were 7-0. Cliftonville beat us 8. And when you're on the touchline, it's horrible. When you get through those. Mm-hmm. And we were hurting really bad. People like me and Spike and Lee Doherty. You could see we were hurting, you know, and we weren't even playing. And it was hurting us. But the players, you know, you were sitting in the changing room after the game, and you're sort of watching things. And you could see players, you know, certain players were having a wee laugh and a joke about something stupid. And after a defeat like that there, I mean, it was you just wanted to put your feet in them, you know, because obviously you were saying to yourself, I mean, how are we going to get anywhere with players like us? Because they just don't care. And most of them give you the impression, as long as they were getting their money, they were happy enough with it.
Do you think is that a reflection of society as well? That things have changed in society, that things the footballs they got, like the play, some of the young players, maybe not all, you know, they come in and if they lose, maybe it doesn't really mean as much as it once did. Or I don't know. It's a difficult one to know why that is the case.
I think so. I think that society has definitely changed, not for the better. You say that they've got their mobile phones now, they've got other things, you know, it's definitely changed. But as I say, the characters, I don't think are there anymore. Win, lose, or draw, some of them, I don't think, you can see some of them coming home after a defeat, and it's just water off a duck's back. I mean, I know when I suffered a defeat, I couldn't wait to Tuesday for the next training session. They could feel in a ball again and get back into the groove again, because it took me a long time to go over the fee. I just attested it.
I think it's like we talk about the characters and about how things were and all the rest. And back in your day when you were playing, one thing that always sticks in my mind was like after the game, all the players from both teams went upstairs and shared a beer and had a drink. And, you know, you could have kicked absolute lumps out of each other, like say Blackie and Mickey Collins or Kirk Hunter, or whoever it was, kicked lumps out of each other, and then after the game, everybody was up in what the That's old right. upstairs was, and you all had a beer and a chat.
That's right.
That doesn't happen anymore.
But that was one of the things that really surprised me when I was down a few weeks ago at the Linfield game, when I found that players don't come up anymore. I thought to myself, why? You know, it's great to, you know, unwind after a game, you know, got talking with players and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I apparently that's at the same at Windsor Park as well. And I find that incredible, to be honest.
I don't know. I don't know if the COVID had anything to do with that. I mean, I don't know. But I think it's been happening for quite a while, to be honest. And I think with all the teams being full time and professional, all that, I think they're sort of, instead of going for a pint, they're having maybe other drinks and stuff like that. So you just don't know. But I agree. I remember teams going upstairs and where they done the new bar up and just make pints everywhere, and they used to give the players soup and I think there's more pints drunk than soup yet, to be honest. So
but that's like, Johnny, you hit the nail on the head there. It's like this new professionalism, and because of the full time and the professionalism, everybody's I shouldn't probably say it, but everybody's so serious now. There's no real crack and fun that used to be in Wes's time, you know, like everybody played and took it seriously, but after the game, it was time to let your hair down and relax a bit, and the crack was good. And that's kind of gone out, and maybe that's the price that we have to pay because of the full-time professionalism.
Yeah, I think as well. I think maybe some of the shenanigans maybe a couple of players might have got up to wouldn't be social media friendly. So, but I genuinely do think people are probably a wee bit cautious of that too. I honestly do think that. I think maybe what people got up to maybe a few years ago and stuff, you know, with the mobile phones, they've not got straight up the Twitter or Facebook, I think.
Yeah.
I'm just being totally honest.
I think 100%.
That's a fair point.
Right there. Yep. And nowadays you can't spit. Somebody has a mobile phone and they have it on you. I think some of the antics that we got up to, I mean, we all socialised together. We had a lot of great crack together, our team. And I think if we'd have had mobile phones in them days, I don't think.
But that's so true. I mean, I grew up in an era where there was no mobile phones, and like I'm thankful for that, because you were able just to, like Les Wes says, you were able just to go and do whatever and have fun without worrying about the repercussions about it. You did what you did, and it happened, and then you moved on. Now, you know, you may have, like with mobile phones and stuff, you could have done some 5 years ago, it could be brought up.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not good. The mobile phones hasn't been good for society, I don't think. And there's people, because let's face it, we've all done things that we're maybe not proud of, you know. You get some creep shoving a mobile phone and they say you're poking your ring up or something, you have a few too many to drink and stuff, and it gets shared all over Facebook. And it's not nice. I don't think it's a nice thing, to be honest.
But the thing is, like, I mean, at the end of the day, football's a sport and it's meant to be enjoyed. You play hard, work hard, play hard as well. And that's what you guys did back in the day, you know, and like going in Europe. I know, like, you know, you talk about Linfield and Copenhagen and going to Europe, but I remember from covering the early days in my reporting career, likes of Korean getting into Europe and stuff. Yes, you went and you played the match competitively, but also after the match, it was there to be enjoyed.
Exactly, you enjoyed it. I remember going to play Grasshoppers with Korean. And one of the funniest times, I think, we played Grasshoppers in Zurich, and they were a good side at that time. And they beat us 3-0 over there. It was a great trip. So it was a brilliant trip. And, you know, seeing cities like Zurich and stuff, and Vienna with the Northern Ireland squad, and, you know, you were seeing culture, you know, different cultures. But I remember playing, getting back to Kenny Shields and the charisma that Kenny had. I remember Grasshoppers beating us 3-0, and the return leg, I remember Kenny coming in and saying, right, lads, we're going for this. And I remember sitting thinking, oh, no, you know, and is that a good idea, Kenny? And for 40 minutes, it seemed, you know, he was right, you know, because they were beating us 1-0, and we equalised, we had 40 minutes gone, and we're running about celebrating. They thought we won the Irish Cup, and I don't think they liked it very much, because before the halftime whistle had blown them 3-1 up, and the second half they dissected us ruthlessly. They played with us and scored another 4 goals and beat us 7-1.
I remember it was 7.
And it was one of the most surreal moments of my career, because I got man of the match.
We had Greg O'Dowd in the podcast, and he was going on about his goal that night.
That's right, Greg O'Dowd scored the goal that night. That's right. And there's a picture. I have a picture in the house of me getting a bottle of champagne. I think maybe they're giving me the bottle of champagne to drink myself, but I thought it was surreal getting a bottle of champagne for man of the match after conceding 7. But they were a good side.
I remember that. They were a good side. I remember Zurich. I wasn't on that trip. Davey Reich, I think, was on that trip, but. And Switzerland, but I mean, they always complained about it being so expensive over there. That was the whole thing.
It was something like £4 or £5 for a pint, which was expensive then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it was great seeing cities like that. So it was. It was a great experience playing against professional players like that. So it was.
And then Kenny was there, and then I think maybe you overlapped. Then you played with Marty under Marty Quinn too, Wes?
No, I got injured. As I say, I got injured. Kenny was very unlucky, because I remember, I think it was the start of the 99-2000 season. We had a good side that year as well. I got injured the week before the season started at Campbelltown. I ruptured my posterior cruciate. That was me out for the season. And I think the first... I think the first 6 or 7 games, maybe 7 or 8 games, we didn't have a keeper. And we lost a lot of points that season at the start of the season. And it wasn't until about 7 or 8 games in that we brought Kevin McKeown in. And then the team settled down a wee bit more, because we had an experienced keeper in. I think if we'd have had Kevin at the start of the season, we might have given Anfield a better shout, you know, a push for the title, because Kevin was a brilliant goalkeeper. It was only when we got him that we started going around, and we could have won the Irish Cup that year as well. I think Portadown beat us in the semi-final with a penalty kick. But that was another season we finished runners-up in the League Two. I think Linfield were 8 or 9 points ahead. But as I say, if we'd have had Kevin at the start of the season, it might have been different.
How did you find playing against Linfield then when you went back? How did you find it?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed playing against the Blue Men. Were always good to me. Always give me a good reception. Always seemed to play well against them for some reason. It wasn't because I was trying to prove them wrong, because they let me go. I was like, oh, it was just, you know, I always seemed to have a good game against them. And, yeah, it was always enjoyable playing against the Blues. It was enjoyable playing against the Blues. I mean, the biggest club in the country, and they always have good support, and there's always a good atmosphere on the ground, you know. If you don't enjoy playing against teams like Anfield, you shouldn't be playing the game.
And the Korean and the Blues always have had a really good, strong rivalry, haven't they?
Oh, of course. Of course. There always seem to be good games between the two clubs. And two passionate sets of supporters. And they always create a good atmosphere when they play.
And sticking with the Korean Linfield thing, what about this nephew of yours? How come you save goals and he scores them then? Matthew Shevlin, how did that happen?
I think I wasn't always a goalkeeper. I mean, I was a striker in my early days. So I think he's got that gene in him from that. No, he's doing really. So he has to try and, you know, keep his feet on the ground and, you know, and tell him a few things here and there. But this season's been a bit of a disaster for him injury-wise after the season he had last year. I think the team has missed him, to be honest. But not only Matthew, but the midfielder, what did you call him?
It's George Carson.
Carson. And one of the main central defenders.
McDonald,
he missed him too. I mean, that's all Spain to say.
Yeah.
Missed, you know, this season. So you can't take three players like out of the team and still expect them, you know, to fire in all cylinders. Those are three, you know, main players that they've missed. And it's funny, against Linfield, it was the first time this season that Oran was able to play strongest defence. Mm-hmm. Look what happened, you know. So it's, you could, as I say, if you had those three players, you know, all through the season, I think it would be different. But no, hopefully he's back firing on all cylinders again. He doesn't get injured again. But no, he's been doing rightly. I hope he, you know, he keeps snoring a bit.
Are you sore on him, or would you be, or do you just let him?
Sometimes I might be a bit sore on him. You know, if I think he's getting a wee bit too big for his boots, you know, I'll let him know a few things. You know, I'll give him a wee rolling and down again. But no, he's a level headed lad.
Mm.
You know, he doesn't when he scores a goal. I've always said to him, if I see you running towards the opposing supporters with your hand in your ear or your finger over your mouth, these stupid celebrations, I mean, that stinging sensation you feel in your arse will be my toe. You know, because I hate players doing that. I really do. You see these boys that celebrate and run and fold their arms in front of the opposing supporters and stuff, put their hand in their ear. If I had been playing and that would have been going on, I think my next tackle would have been a red card, because I detest that sort of thing. And I've always told him, you know, not to do that. And good, fair play to him. He celebrates with his players and his own fans, and that's the way it should be.
It seems like Damien will back up here. It seems like he's been around forever. Yeah, he's still only, what, 25, 26, Chevy? Maybe.
Oh, he's been, it's hard to believe he's been on 10 years now.
Yeah.
He made his debut at 15 and scored with his first touch. But he's been very unlucky. He was very unlucky with injuries earlier in his career. He was very unlucky with the move. It didn't materialise across the water. Crystal Palace, one day signed him. Sheffield United, one day signed him. Ballymena were looking, I think, Ballymena were a wee bit cheeky with the money. I think they were looking for him. And he could have been across the water. But as I say, football doesn't always work like that. Sometimes, you know, these things happen. And he's been very unlucky with injuries, I have to say. But hopefully, I think the way he plays the game too, I think he's a Brian Robson type character. He'll put himself in situations where he's more apt to get injuries. I mean, he works very hard, so he does. And sometimes I try to tell him, you know, don't be putting yourself in situations where you might get injured. You know, there's balls that you don't really have to go for. But the other day, if you tell him, well, it takes something out of his game, if you take that out of his game, sort of thing. You know,
but I suppose when you look at him now, Chevy, yeah, he's had an injury ravaged season this year. But you look at him last year and what he's achieved, etc., finished the league's top goal scorer. He's almost found the right club for him now as well. He seems very at home here, and given everything that you said, Linfield move was a bit up and down for him, the Palace move and everything. He's now found a home almost, hasn't he?
Yeah. Oh, he loves playing for Corey. And as I say, he loves scoring goals. He's not happy unless he scores goals. And obviously, that season, when you're a striker, I know myself, when I played as a striker, I love scoring goals too. But when you're injured and you're playing, and I noticed it when I was a coach too, when you're sitting at the touchline, you just want to go on the pitch and play. And it can't be easy. And my last season at Corey, you know, when I was injured, you were cheering. It's worse when you're on the touchline.
Mm-hmm.
You're kicking every ball and you seem to get more worked up. Whereas when you're playing, you have to be a bit more relaxed and calm and focused on the game. When you're off the pitch, you seem to get a bit more agitated.
Well, would managing be something that you're interested in, Wes, or is that ship sail for you?
No, I had it for 2 weeks at Corian, and you take the pressure of being a player, and you multiply it by 10 as a manager, and that's when I realised I'd never be a manager because it was too much. You say you can't take it home with you, but you do take it home with you. And the 2 weeks I had as a manager at Corian was it was a stressful time, to be honest. I don't know how to do it, to be honest.
Who were you trying to manage in those 2 weeks?
When Kenny left the club, they needed somebody to come in. I just took over as got help from Tony O'Dougherty. He was helping me in the 2 weeks I was there. I wasn't really a manager. I was just doing sort of an entrance type thing. And then Marty Quinn came in there. And I didn't get a chance to play on the Murray, which was disappointing because of my injury. Mm. And then obviously the next season, I fell out with the chairman, which wasn't a good thing. And it was very disappointing to leave the club because I'd love to finish my career here. Mm-hmm. I would love to stay and fought Kevin for his place, but which would have been hard enough work because Kevin was a good keeper. But that wouldn't have worried me, you know. But I was disappointed leaving the club, I must say, because I would love to finish my career here.
That's football, isn't it? But fans up here still love you as well, Wes, don't they? You're always very well regarded up here.
I always treat it well when I come up here, and always gave me all for the club. And I think the fans noticed that, like even when I made mistakes, you know, they weren't too hard on me because they knew I was always, you know, giving me all 100%. Maybe sometimes it was maybe a wee bit over the top at times, but that was the way I played the game. I never changed really through my career.
Nothing wrong with that, Johnny. Is there a bit of passion? We all like a bit of passion.
Oh, of course, that's what football's all about in life. And if you don't have passion, then what's the point? You know, that sort of way. So, no, definitely. I was going to ask you, we obviously play Crusaders on Saturday, and Stephen Baxter has his tenure's coming to an end. And what do you make of his managerial time at Crusaders?
He's done a fantastic job at Crusaders. I mean, he's won, what, 4 league titles, 3 Irish Cups? I mean, you can't argue with that. He's won a Satanic Cup as well. Like Baxter, he was always a passionate player when he played. He took that into management, and you kind of argue with his record. And obviously, he's had some managers go on too long, and he's maybe, you know, he's had the good sense to realize, you know, maybe now is the time to go out. And but nobody can argue with his record. He's done a fantastic job at Crusaders, and whoever comes in after him is going to be big shoes to fill.
Declan Cadell, he's going to take over.
Time will tell. Time will tell. Whether, you know, Declan Cadell was a passionate player, and he knows the club inside out, and could turn out to be a good appointment. And obviously, he's a novice, but he's done his coaching badges and stuff. And I'll be fair. Time will answer that mystery. If it's a good appointment or not?
Yeah, time will tell. Tough act to follow, Johnny. I think there was some speculation in some quarters today about Warren Feeney's future, the Glens as well.
Yeah, it looks like Warren Feeney's going to be going. I think when all the supporters clubs have come out and sort of unified and they want change and everything, and I think with Warren Feeney and his previous allegiances, I think he could have went into Glentoran and won the treble, and they still wouldn't have won fans over. And I think that's just sort of the rivalry that's there. And I think from when you're, no disrespect, they log all, but I think when by all kinds, I think Loughgall played really, really well. But to lose 3-0 at home, they're there when the chips are low. I think the writing's on the wall.
I mean, Wes, what's your take on that? I mean, Johnny summed it up there with Warren, his Linfield days, and the Glens really never took to him.
Well, you could say the same with Roy Coyle, and they accept that Roy Coyle as well. You know, I think if had he won a trophy, you know, I think he's in the semi-final of the Irish Cup. And, you know, I think they should have given him a chance to see if they'd have won the Irish Cup, you know. Mm. And, you know, because, I mean, you look at Alex Ferguson. Alex Ferguson was 4 years at Manchester United before he won a trophy. And look what happened there, you know. I don't think a player's you know, if a player comes in and gives his all for the club, I don't think who he's played for in the past should be an issue. But obviously there's some people, you know, you can never reach that way. I think he should have been given a chance to win the Irish Cup beforehand.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I think they could have given him to the end of the season, see if he wins the Irish Cup. If he still got a chance of winning the Irish Cup and qualifying for Europe, even through the league as well. Yep. I mean, it seems a bit pulling the trigger a bit quick on him, actually, doesn't it?
I think so. I think so. Plus, he's a character as well.
Yeah.
Warren's a character. He's one of the characters.
Would your pass have crossed in your playing careers?
No. I don't think they would have. No, I think Warren came after me.
He'd be younger. Yeah. But yeah, as you say, he is a character, isn't he? And I mean, we talked about it earlier, the lack of characters, but like he is a character.
He's definitely good a value, character. Like, isn't he? Oh, he's good value. He's a character. I think a game needs characters. I think a game's going to become very stale. I think characters like Warren Finney in the team are in the game. And to be honest, I was surprised when I heard the news today. Is he leaving by his own accord? Or?
Nobody knows, that's the thing. Nobody knows.
It could be the old by mutual consent, couldn't it? It could be one of them.
Mutual consent, to do it before a big semi-final with Linfield, I think, is a bit strange.
It is strange.
You know, unless they've got a new man ready to come in. I don't think it's fair. They should have given to the end of the season and given a chance to win the Irish Cup.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. Just when we're talking about managers, we've sort of talked about Corian's difficult season. The job that Oran Kearney has done at Corian, I mean, you've seen him up close when you were at Ballymena, I suppose, and he's done
played
a right
with Oran as well.
You played with Oran, yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, I mean, he's done a right job over the years, hasn't he?
Yeah, he won the Irish Cup with Corian, and he did a good job at Kips and Burn up. You know, he's experienced and he knows what he's doing. I mean, look, even Roy Coyle had a tough time at Linfield, like David Jeffers as well, the trophies they won. I mean, all managers go through bad spells, you know. It's interesting. Oran has already had his bad spell. If he has another bad spell, he's going to be in trouble, obviously. You know, I mean, fans are fickle. You know, they want success right away, sort of thing. But as we pointed on before, he had three of his best players out, which, you know, was a big thing in my eyes. When you take three of those players out, I mean, you take your leading scorer, and obviously the spine of the team ripped out of it. It's going to be very hard to keep getting results on a regular basis.
Well, like he said after last week, Johnny, that, you know, in other seasons, they've started the season well and finished badly, and he's hoping that it's kind of reversed this year, that they can put a good finish to the end of the season with all the players available and try and get that European spot, which would be some achievement given some of the games we've watched this year.
If we get Europe, that's the biggest robbery since the Northern Bank, to be honest. Just with everything that's went on and players we've had out, as you say, and just different runs of form. And yeah, but that's sort of the beauty of the way the league's devised now, I suppose, between fourth and seventh all having a chance for Europe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And whilst I probably don't overly agree with it in terms of, I don't really think a team finishing seventh should probably finally play in Europe, let's be totally honest. But that's just the way the league is, and that's just the way the cookie crumbles, and that's just the way the championship.
But you'll take it. You'll 100%, take it.
Yeah, 1,000%. And if you finish,
I totally agree with what you're saying there.
If you finish sixth in the championship, you're in the playoff, and you could a team that finishes third. Might not get on. That's just the way the cookie crumbles.
I suppose what it does do and what it was intended to do is
keeps the excitement going.
Well, it makes the end of the game, end of the season games. I mean, when Wes played, if you were in fifth or sixth in the league, Wes, by March time, your season was effectively over, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Unless you were in an Irish Cup, you know, your season was over.
Other than that, you were just playing games.
Playing out the season.
Yeah, and those weren't great games, like a lot of them. But now every game is important in the top six, the bottom six, you've still got a chance of getting Europe. So it does. From that point of view, I guess it's probably a good idea. It makes games relevant, doesn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
Keeps
and obviously, like when you see the pot that's the money qualifying for Europe now, It's fantastic for an Ashley club.
It is.
And when you look at it now, the funds, you know, to get players, the good players and stuff, you know, it's very important to qualify for Europe.
More important than ever, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
Back in the day, it was a bit of a jolly, but now it's a bit more serious, I think.
Yeah. Well, when you look at the 70s and the 80s, the chance of getting a big club in Europe was a lot greater. But now you have to go through all this.
I don't agree. I don't agree with that. I hate that.
You know, it's. I don't agree with that at all. You know, it's of course it's all money orientated now.
Yeah. So well, I mean, Corey ended some great draws in Europe down the years, most notably Spurs. You know, the early '80s. You know, Stevie Archibald and Garth Crooks, that team. You know what a game that was, and the showground was absolutely. You couldn't have got another punter in that day. It was just.
Oh, those days are gone.
Those days, and that's sad too. That's sad, isn't it? Because the money that clubs were made from those, you know, those were big paydays.
Yeah. I mean, is it 250 grand or something you get for every win?
It's definitely something as big as that. So yeah, we got through sure a couple of rounds a few years ago, and that really paid for the pitch. So yeah, it's monumental. I think that's probably why teams are taking it a bit more seriously and stuff like that. So that's definitely big money.
Go a long way to pay them wages when they go full time, hey? What about would you like to have been playing, say, now and having a chance to go full time?
The full time model now, that's I can't see how they're going to sustain it. I really don't. I mean, the big crowds for Irish League. But I don't think the crowds are quite big enough, to be honest, to sustain the full-time model. I mean, in my day, it was very rare a player getting £1,000 a week. But now you hear stories about players getting £1,000 a week, even more. And to be honest, I think it's obscene an Irish League player making £1,000 a week. I really do.
That's big money, like.
It's big money for an Irish League player. And long gone are the days when we played, we were making £200 a week or £300 a week, and that was a good wage.
That was good money then.
That was good money in them days. But nowadays, it's just gone. It's gone through the roof. You know, and look, fair play to the players if they get it. Fair play to them. You know, but I don't see how it's going to create a system where there's going to be two or three leagues and within one league.
Yeah.
You've got the top three or four teams, then you've got another league under that, then you've got another league below that. And it makes it harder for, say, clubs, provincial clubs like Ballymena there. Take Ballymena, for example. If Ballymena got two or three good young lads coming through, right, they're not going to stay there because the big clubs, it's going to be hard for a team like Ballymena to build a side, not only Ballymena, other clubs as well. It's going to be hard for them to build a side because if they do get two or three good lads coming through, the Larns and the Linfields and the Glentorns, the Cliftonvilles are going to come and take them off them.
That's what's going to happen.
It's going to make it hard for them to sustain any level of success because they're good players are going to. And if these teams offer the kind of money that they're talking about, it's very hard. And plus, there's the added bonus of challenging for trophies as well on a regular basis. It's very hard for young Kerry to turn that down.
Would be hard to turn down, Johnny.
No, definitely not. It's just the landscape's just totally changed. To be fair, Wales was speaking there and you mentioned Ballymena and you're thinking that Craig Farquhar obviously went to Larne and now he's on to Palace. Kofi Balmer done the exact same. Sean Graham's went from Ballymena to Larne. Just look at all the players that I'm sorry for blaming Larne, by the way. Linfield done it all throughout the year. So yeah, it's just one of them things. If you're a young footballer and full time football's put in front of you now, you're more likely going to go.
Well, what you're essentially saying, Johnny, is Ballymena is a feeder club now. Is that what you're saying?
I think Corian have been very lucky they haven't won that one. I think if you're being totally honest, I think we've obviously lost Ben Dougherty to Larne, but we've been more or less fortunate we haven't lost too many. It's just the way the league's going, unfortunately. Cliftonville, you could argue Cliftonville's now a feeder club for Larne.
Yeah, they've lost quite a few, haven't they?
Yep. You've Ives, Gallagher. It's just the way the league's
going. I think as well as perfectly summed it up. I think it's just going to become more and more the way of things. And then because of that, I suppose it's probably not forcing Korean's hand, but encouraging Korean to kind of go down that model too, because otherwise they will lose their young players too.
Yeah, that's just the way it goes. Yep, 100%. Can't argue with that. And you need to try and entice. And I suppose we spoke about it before, where geographically, where Korean's located, it's a great hub to try and bring players in and keep the players that you have.
Just finally, Wes, before we let you go, we just talk about these days and the older days. Happy to have played when you did? Any regrets or happy with your lot?
No regrets at all. I feel very lucky that I played in the era that I did play in. I played with a lot of great players, played against a lot of great players, and against a lot of great characters too. There was a lot more passion, I think, then. I don't want to harp on it. You hear that's always better than my day sort of thing. There's a lot of good things about the game nowadays. The facilities have improved and stuff like that. But in my day, I played a lot against a lot of good characters. And as I say, having a drink after the game with supporters, mixing with supporters after the game and stuff was fantastic in my day. It doesn't seem to be as much as that now. And the abuse that used to take in them days as well. I mean, some of the things that fans would shout at you and stuff. And to me, I enjoy playing in that era. It's part of the game. If you can't take abuse, you shouldn't be playing the game. It's as simple as that. And there's a thing that I want to pull up on too. The AFA, they're going hard with these pyrotechnics and stuff like that. I mean, they're doing it all over Europe. I mean, to me, I think it adds a bit of colour, a bit, you know, stuff to the game. You know, are they trying to kill the atmosphere in the game? They try to take the passion out of the game now. I mean, I know talking to a few players and they love it. They love that. It adds a bit of colour and stuff. Adds a bit of spice to it. Adds a bit to the atmosphere of a game. And I just don't. And okay, I can understand him taking the sectarian stuff out of that, you know, the chant and stuff like that. I can see through that there. Like, but if you can't take abuse when you're a player, nowadays you get the feeling of a player takes abuse, you'll go start crying to his mother. You know, in my day, I mean, I had balls of whiskey. I mean, one day playing up at Corey and Showgrounds, there was a ball of whiskey flew by my head. An empty bottle, the good sense they drink it before they threw it at me. But anyway. And I just left the ball and threw it behind the goal. That was part and parcel. Nowadays, if that happened, they'd be over at the referee crying their eyes out, stuff like that. I remember playing in a game one day where it was spat on. I just took it as part of the game. You know, it was just part and parcel of the game. But nowadays, if that sort of thing happened, they would go apeshit about it. You know, I think they just go over the top about a few things, to be honest. I think they should be trying to keep the atmosphere in the grounds. Okay, some things you can get out, as I said, the sectarian stuff, but the rest of it, I mean, I think it should be allowed to stay. That's my opinion. Opinions are like arseholes, everybody has one.
Very good. Yes, and that's the way it should be. Everybody should have an opinion and should be allowed to voice their opinion and come to some sort of an arrangement. But I get what you're saying, like, about the atmosphere and everything else. You don't want to dilute it to an extent where there is a lack of an atmosphere. Now, I'm not in the decision making process, so it's not for me to say, but you know, there has to be hopefully a happy medium or an accommodation somewhere to make that happen, you know. So, but yeah, I know what you're saying. Like, and Johnny had mentioned earlier the shed, the old shed in the old days of the Korean, and you literally had like a wire mesh fence between the two sets of opposing fans, which when you look back on it now, it was just absolutely mad.
Yeah.
And like anybody that was ever in there could tell you, they could tell you some stories in there. you were well out of it. But listen, here, Wes, we will let you go because you've given us a good lot of your time there, and it's been a great listen, and it's been great to catch up with you. I hope you'll be back up at Korean in the not too distant future again.
Oh, certainly.
Keep an eye on that nephew of yours.
Oh, definitely. Oh, that's one of the first results I look for on a Saturday afternoon.
Very good.
always thought it would be same. He scored a goal on Frey Harvey for him, you know.
I mean, and I know you were too young, Johnny, but I mean, I suppose good for you listening to Wes and some of his times at the various clubs.
Yeah, like I always appreciate all our guests coming on, but I suppose when it's people that you don't really know or didn't have the fortune of seeing, I suppose always nice they know about different things. And when people mention different names like Greg O'Dowd or Wes Lamont, you go, I know who that fella is. I heard a few stories of him. So it's always good. It's more an education more than anything else. So it was good. It was good to get Wes on. And Frankie Moffat, I have to give him a bit of credit. He obviously gave me Wes's number. And so you can blame him. Wes, that's who you blame for this.
Well, it's been very enjoyable, boys. It's always good to talk about the times.
It is. It's always good. Right, well, here we will wrap it up because I know, Johnny, you have a wee early start. You have to go and pack your bag. You're going somewhere special tomorrow, aren't you?
I am for the Rangers match tomorrow night. So fingers crossed that they can go through. And I watched Porto last night. They were beaten in penalty. So sitting there thinking, Craig, I hope another Portuguese team loses this week. And hopefully not Sporting Lisbon. Hopefully it's Benfica. So no, I'm looking forward to getting over.
Yeah, over. Yeah, would you be over at Rangers, Wes? Would you go?
No, to be honest, I don't really. I look at the football across the water, and to be honest, I think VAR's ruining the game. To be honest, some of the decisions. I mean, I that wasn't a penalty on Sunday at the Man City game. I just don't know. I mean, some of the decisions are just baffling. You know, to be honest, I mean, the VAR was supposed to be brought in, you know, to help things, but it's made things worse. I mean, the supporters can't even celebrate a goal now.
Well,
in case there's something wrong with it.
I have to say, for my sins, I support Leeds playing in the Championship. Obviously, no VAR, 100 times better. Yes, yeah. Decisions will go against you, but who cares? At least it's done and dusted. There's none of this.
That's right. There's none of this. About.
Like, it's different game down there in that Championship. Different game.
Yeah, very much so. And like, to be honest, and the mega, you hear those geezers, I don't listen to those geezers talk sport anymore because they talk the biggest load of crap. So they really do. And,
you better not listen to it.
No, you better not listen to it.
It's just there's so many people now making a business or making a living out of football, VAR, and talking about it. Yeah, and that's why they have to keep going with these things because so many people are making a living out of it, and that's it. That's the way I look at it. I'm very cynical. So.
Unfortunately, that's the way the game is going now. You've got to accept it. But you wouldn't mind so much if you get it right. You know.
You wouldn't think it'd be too hard, like, with the amount of cameras they have. It wouldn't be too hard to get the damn thing right, like, but no. Not me. It's worse than ever. But here, listen, you don't have that to worry about. Your playing days long gone with a great of whereas, well, here, thank you very much once again for coming on. Johnny, thanks as ever for helping sort out the guests and all your help and your co-hosting. Thank you to everybody for listening as ever. Thanks to the Lodge Hotel. And good luck to Korean on Saturday up at Seaview. We can say goodbye to Stephen Baxter, hopefully with an away win. So until next weekend, as ever, come on the band side.